Okay, we are, of course, as I mentioned, in Job chapter 19. We had mentioned some of Bildad's arguments just quickly. Let me kind of summarize basically what he says in chapter 18. He accused Job of playing word games. Remember, a lot of these speeches feel like a repetitive thing because I keep saying the same thing. They say that Job is playing word games. Bildad challenges him to come to his senses. He charges him with actually hurting himself. And it seems very condemning regarding the notion that in his mind, Job is trying to reverse the system that we've been talking about, that retribution idea. And to them, that is the end all of everything. And really, in their mind, if that's not the only way that God operates, that is some kind of blasphemous statement about God, which really is just undoing their view of God. And really, the majority, verses 5 through 21, he spends a lot of time talking about the place of sinners and what happens to sinners and what happens to people who are in rebellion to God. And much of that is true, except it doesn't apply to Job, of course. So that usually is the case with the friends that frequently they say things and you go, well, that feels right if we applied it to a rebellious person or a sinful person. And by sinful, I mean rebellious. But that doesn't fit Job. We know it doesn't fit Job, and yet the friends are just very satisfied in their mind with their approach, I would say, because they just keep parroting and repeating. Job chapter 19 is another one of those chapters that kind of contains some passages that we're very familiar with, maybe a couple of verses, but maybe we didn't read all of the chapter. And so, and this actually contains a verse, and I'll just be honest with you, I'm not 100% certain on a couple of these verses and on what I think it may be saying, but we're going to open it up, we're going to talk through it, work through it. It's not because I haven't studied it, I used to be more certain than I am now. So, we'll look at it. They will feel familiar to you, but the context needs to be considered. So we'll get to do that today. Job 19 is an important section. Again, him responding to his friends and feeling that he has been targeted by God, as we've seen all the way through. Have we, other than maybe chapter 13, have we sensed very much hope in the mind or the voice of Job as far as things are going to work out? No, you hadn't. We could talk a little bit about chapter 13, and we did. Exactly what does he mean? It's one thing to say, I really believe I'll be vindicated. If the right thing is done, I'll be vindicated. If the right thing is done, I'll be declared innocent. Because in his integrity, he knows that he has not been rebellious to God, right? So that's going on in his mind, and so sometimes he'll speak to that, but it seems to me that there hasn't been a lot of hope. In fact, he talks about his hopeless condition as it was presently quite often. So let's get into this. If I were going to summarize this, you might, when you read through chapter 19, is God for me or is he against me? He's felt like he's been against Job. In fact, Job even says he feels closed in. He feels cornered. He feels targeted. Does he think God is his friend or his enemy so far? Yeah, there's no question. That's right. He has felt that God is his enemy. They are hostile. He's not seeing, of course, Satan's involvement. And I really don't know how much he knew about Satan in the first place. To him, it's God must have targeted me, but I don't really know why. I have been faithful. It's a very chaotic, disorienting, confusing thing for him, but he's still hanging on to his integrity. Okay, so chapter 19, I think the first 12 verses, what comes out to me is he really does feel like God is treating him as though he were a sinner, even though he doesn't feel like he is. And so thus his friends would respond the way they do. Let's read chapter 19, and we're going to pick up on this, and I'm just going to begin the reading in verse 1. Chapter 19, and in verse 1. Then Job responded, "How long will you torment me and crush me with words?" This is in response to Bildad. "These 10 times you have insulted me. You are not ashamed to wrong me. Even if I have truly erred, my error lodges with me. If indeed you vaunt yourselves against me and prove my disgrace to me, Know then that God has wronged me and has closed his net around me. Behold, I cry violence, but I get no answer. I shout for help, but there is no justice. He has walled up my way so that I cannot pass, and he has put darkness on my paths. He has stripped my honor from me and removed the crown from my head. He breaks me down on every side and I am gone. And he has uprooted my hope like a tree. He has also kindled his anger against me and considered me as his enemy. His troops come together and build up their way against me and camp around my net. Okay, let's just stop there. So maybe I should have asked those prior questions before I read that. How does he feel? Well, he feels cornered. He even says, first of all, he says, you know, you're just insulting me, you're tormenting me, you're crushing me with these words, speaking of his friends there early on. And notice verse 4 with me a little bit. So first of all, he's already said, you guys say you're trying to be my comforters, basically, but you're terrible, terrible at that. You're terrible comforters. Your words torment me, and part of it is they're not really getting into the depth of what Job has been saying. They're not listening to the emotion and the heart and the genuine sentiments of Job. They just keep repeating this very cold, formalistic idea. It's not really engaging. And I'm sure you've talked to people before where you were kind of talking past each other. You already knew what you were going to say. You weren't really communicating. And so they were saying things that didn't apply. Well, how does that make you feel? Well, they're saying things that don't apply. It makes you feel dismissed, doesn't it? And so they're completely dismissing the reality of what Job is actually feeling and going through. And I do think there's a powerful lesson that we've mentioned from time to time in our study as far as comforting people. Even if, and this is kind of Job's point, even if I have committed some disgrace or some error, this isn't how to help me. And you'll notice there in verse 4, that statement, even if I have truly erred, my error lodges with me. If indeed you vaunt yourselves against me and prove my disgrace to me, know then that God has wronged me and has closed his net around me. One of the things that may be implied in that is if I've done something wrong, I don't know what it is. But if I have done something wrong and yet I don't know what it is, it looks like I'd get some reason for this or be able to draw some conclusion. So this isn't at all matching up. It's not. I think what he's saying is I am no intentional rebel. You know, I'm not somebody who's just knows I have all this sin and all this corruption the way they were talking to him. If there is a sin, I don't know what it is. And so even if they thought, okay, there's some sin, they at least need to give him the benefit of the doubt that he doesn't recognize what it is and not talk to him as though he's just this corrupt, tainted sinner who's with knowledge rebelling against God. And so I think that comes out, but I do think there's a level of humility in the argument. Does he feel like God has targeted him? Absolutely. He's been saying that all the way through. Does he feel like God has wronged him? Yes. Because the system's not working with him. And so he feels like this isn't something that he deserved. Is he accurate in that estimation? No. But it is, you know, when you read Job, I don't think God feels offended from this, from what I can read. He's going to teach Job. He's going to try to shape Job's understanding. Job doesn't know the whole story. But Job is putting it all out there, you know, before God. He is expressing exactly how he feels. And he says, he has closed his net around me. You remember earlier he says, I wish you would quit looking at me all the time. Just look away from me. Don't stare at me. Because his feeling is if God is, you know, honed in, the more God looks at him, the worse it is. He'd be better off if God just didn't even know that he existed. And that's part of the whole argument about maybe if he dies, you know, all this attention will go away and thus the suffering will go away. He says in verses 7 to 12, he feels trapped like a city under siege. And so if you can remember Jerusalem in 70 AD being encompassed by Titus and his armies, that's kind of how he feels. He feels he's trapped There's no way to get out of this situation. Verse 12. Okay. Right. Yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah, I was. Let me think about that, Roger, for a minute. You're right. It is different from the text that's dealing with the light of God's word and that kind of thing. I was trying to think of some of the Psalms of Lament. And I'd have to look. I know Isaiah uses language like that sometimes regarding darkness. There is language that sounds a little bit like this. Psalms 22, you know, where he... I'm just looking here. Psalms 22. Of course, we know that's messianic, but it is a psalm of lament. It's a little different than Job, to be sure, but, you know, where he's crying, "Be not far from me, for trouble is near. There is none to help. Many bulls have surrounded me." You are right. It does, and I'm sure we could find other, you know, wisdom literature too, but when you look at Job 19, he does, that's about as hopeless, and this has got to contribute itself to our later discussion, but it's pretty hopeless. You know, this is how Job feels. This is how he feels in the difficulty. Doesn't mean that's actually how it is from God's perspective. But I think when he says, "And he has put darkness on my path," that's right. I'm not getting any direction and guidance from God. I think that's your point, right, Roger? Yeah. Right. Right. And I think that may be part of what he's saying to his friends too, is, okay, if I've erred, why didn't he let me know? I don't feel any guidance or direction. I'm cut off. That's right. And this goes along with what I was trying to say. It's as if Job is saying, "Now God is treating me as though I'm some rebellious sinner," which that's kind of that language, but he's still saying he's not. Okay, that's a good point. That's a good point. Did anybody else have a question before I move on? Okay, let's go through some of these words. Verse 7, "I cry violence, but I get no answer. I shout for help, but there is no justice." So he doesn't feel this is just. He's not getting an answer. He doesn't feel a sense of relationship. He has walled up my way so that I cannot pass. He has put darkness on my path so that I don't feel that relationship where there's guidance and direction and even help. It'd be one thing if I were suffering and I could hear from him. Verse 9, "He has stripped my honor from me." I mean, so their status we've been talking about, all status, all dignity, any kind of honor. "He's removed the crown from my head. He breaks me down on every side." So now it even intensifies. He is literally killing me, but he won't kill me. That's what he's saying. And so he breaks me down on every side and I am gone. And he has uprooted my what? Now, how much hope do you think he feels? What does he say he uprooted? Hope. So, this is how he feels. Verse 11, he's angry against me and considered me as his what? Enemy. So it doesn't feel like when you're reading him, he has this, you know, great hope for the future. And then in verse 12, his troops come together and they build up their way against me and they camp around my tent. Verse 13, "He has removed my brothers far from me and my acquaintances are completely estranged from me." So my network of support is gone in every way. So initially, I think he said, okay, God treats me as a sinner, and these may kind of overlap. But God has also isolated me as though I were a sinner. There is a real sense of aloneness and loneliness that you hear from Job that often comes with suffering. And it seems to me when I read him, You know, sometimes I think we've been kind of superficial. Like, well, it was all about, you know, the physical things he lost and all that. It really wasn't. I don't think it was really about that. It was about what that represented, and what it represented in his mind was this isolation from God and this alienation from God. But I don't know why. I don't know why I feel abandoned. And you can understand, of course, he doesn't know. There's this battle going on between good and evil, and he's right at the centerpiece of it. But I think it can help us appreciate why in suffering there's an intellectual, spiritual, mental battle that goes on. And it's important that we strive to see that expressing ourselves to God is a healthy thing. And that's what a relationship does. Chris, did you have... Right. That's a good point. Yeah, and that is a good point, because even though the only thing that hasn't happened is God's not allowing Satan to kill him, but all those walls of protection, that was the... What he doesn't know is God is allowing Job to reprove the satanic argument against God and against Job. But it feels like I've been targeted, but you are right. It's the reason he feels this way is because those walls of protection have been taken away. He's not inaccurate in that. It's just as far as the background. And so look there with me, Job 19, verse 13. He has removed my brothers far from me. My acquaintances are completely estranged from me. My relatives have failed, and my intimate friends have forgotten me. Those who live in my house and my maids consider me a stranger. I am a foreigner in their sight. I call to my servant, but he does not answer. So even the one who was to serve me, who was functionally inferior to me, they don't pay any attention to what I say. They don't, you know, I'm not even recognized, I'm sure, his physical appearance, but also just him having had everything stripped away from him. He's lost everything. He says, I call to my servant, but he does not answer. I have to implore him with my mouth. And then he says, my breath is offensive to my wife, and I'm loathsome to my own brothers. And so that, I'm sure, was the affliction of the body. Even young children despise me. I rise up and they speak against me. All my associates abhor me, and those I love have turned against me. My bone clings to my skin and my flesh. And I know this may be kind of painful to look at, but, you know, there are afflictions, and there are diseases that cause someone to look this way. And so I think he's saying, this is when you look at my... I'll get you in just a minute, Todd. When you look at my appearance, even, my bone clings to my skin and my flesh, and I have escaped only by the skin of my teeth. Pity, pity me, O you, my friends, for the hand of God has struck me. So, again, Job doesn't know the whole story, but you have to understand why Job would feel this way. And so he has a physical aspect, you know, the bodily affliction, but there's a war that wages on the mind. And his bigger concern, I think, is that all this is happening. He believes this is some kind of, you know, wrath or anger from God, but he doesn't know why. And so he feels alone, but who are you supposed to go to? Because now the one who he had always gone to feels like he's his enemy, but he doesn't know why he's his enemy. So there's just this, all this chaos that's going on in his mind. Todd, go ahead.
He's still married.
Mm-hmm.
During all this. And if there's anybody that should have been by his side, it would have been his wife. But she's referenced, I believe, twice in this whole book.
Mm-hmm.
Back the first time, she tells him to curse God and die.
Right.
And then the second time, it's here in the verse like 17.
Right. Verse 17. Even my wife doesn't.
Yeah. Strange. My breath is strange from my wife. So, if her, I mean, this man is in a lowly state because... Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've talked about this a little bit. I'm going to assume, I think it's a safe conclusion, that if Job, before this happened, bought completely 100% into retribution theology, I'm sure he did, Because he even says to his friends, if I were you, I might be saying the same thing, you know, but I know better because of what I'm going through. But let's say that was the case, and we know what the friends think. I'm sure his wife would have thought the same thing. So it does make you wonder what exactly, we don't know a lot about her, she's only mentioned a couple of times, but what does she think is happening? She's lost children, status, dignity, all this, and she's watching him suffer. She's certainly not consoling him or comforting him or supportive of him. But perhaps she does think, for her and him, it would be better off if he just did whatever. You know, that's how it feels to me.
Probably the reason we don't know much about her because she's certainly not giving him any help.
No, she's not. I guess I would say about that, I'm not defending Job's wife. That'd be kind of a bad position to take. But I do think she, we don't know what else is said. There's not much said about her, I think, because of the lack of support and all that. But I think it's more to see everything stripped away from Job. Everybody stripped away from Job. And that goes to your point that, you know, you kind of start with the possessions, which would be representative of his status. And then you have, you know, of course, he lost children. She's lost children. It does feel like God is against him. It does feel like God has targeted him. You know, you wonder, does she think the way the friends think that there's something? She should have known Job pretty well, but does she think there's something she doesn't know about in Job? I don't know. So you have the friends and the acquaintances and people, and he says, even my servants and little children, and then it's like you end with even his wife. So there is nobody left. And he's at war with God, and he says, that's a battle I can't win. But the one thing, what is the one thing he feels is there with him? His integrity and his possible vindication all the way through. That's tough. You know, it'd be tempting just to say, I'm just going to be done with this. But he does it. And he keeps crying out to God about this. Okay, good point, though. Let me see. Okay, so he's crying out for pity and compassion. And he said, the hand of God has struck me, verse 21. So Job feels God has afflicted him out of his displeasure, even though the reality is Satan has done so to demonstrate, or God is allowing Satan to do so to demonstrate his faithfulness. Okay. Verse 21, pity me, O you my friends, for the hand of God has struck me. Why do you persecute me as God does? And are not satisfied with my flesh. Now, this is the section I really want. Okay, so we've been building up. Everything's been ripped away from me. I'm the enemy of God. God is treating me like an enemy, a rebellious sinner, and all that. And that's going to lead us to this next section, and you're going to see what Job really wants. And what he wants is not just possessions back or restoration or even the blessings we think of physically at the end. There's a singular thing that Job wants more than anything else. And he's going to talk about that in the coming verses. Go ahead, Alan.
I think the latter part of verse 22 just reinforces what you were saying earlier about the modes of his suffering. Obviously, he's suffering physically. And it seems like he's saying, isn't that enough? Are you not satisfied with my flesh?
Right.
Now you're inflicting emotional suffering.
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah, it's like it won't stop. Okay. Now, the part I'm looking forward to is the next section. Does anybody have a comment or question? No. Is everything fairly clear?
I want to ask, you know, Job, if God has done this thing, but it says here, Job, my Redeemer lives. So he still was God.
We'll talk about that. We'll talk about it. That's where we're going. You're right. He's confused by what he perceives of God's actions, but if he didn't have a desire for fellowship with God, he wouldn't be crying out to God. That's right. But this is where we're going to get into, I think, somewhat of a challenging section. Okay. But good point. All right, I want to read verses 23. I tell you what, Todd, would you read verses 23 through 29 of Job chapter 19?
Oh, that my words were now written, oh, that they were printed in a book, that they were graven with an iron pen and lead in the rock forever. though after my skin worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh shall I see God, whom I shall see for myself, and mine eyes shall behold, and not another. For my reins be consumed within me. But ye should say, why persecute we him? And the root of the matter is found in thee. Be ye afraid of the sword, for wrath bringeth the punishment of the sword, and ye know there is a day.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Todd. All right, so his wish is still for vindication. We need to work through this a little bit. So verse 23, oh, that my words were written, oh, that they were inscribed in a book, that with an iron stylus and lead they were engraved in a rock forever. So he is not backing up from his defense of his integrity. He says, interestingly, we have the book of Job. But, you know, he said, I want people to know. I'm not ashamed of this. That I am, again, not this rebellious sinner. So there's no sense of the one thing Job is certain of and is true all the way through the book is that he has not rebelled against God, that he is a faithful servant of God. Verse 25, as for me, I know that my Redeemer lives. And at the last he will take his stand on the earth. Even after my skin is destroyed, yet from my flesh I shall see God, whom I myself shall behold, and whom mine eyes will see and not another. My heart faints within me. Okay, so there's several options on this passage that I want to talk to you about. So we'll probably start, and don't hesitate to tell me what you think, because whether I think that now or not doesn't matter, because at some point I probably agreed with you in the past. Okay? So when you read that just on the surface, let's take the surface reading of that, and then we're going to back up and look at some contextual considerations. We've got a song, don't we? Okay. Now that song, I know that my Redeemer liveth, tends to be, in our minds, when we sing that song, I should have looked it up. I don't even remember all. Todd knows the lyrics, I guess. But what is that song primarily? It's a beautiful song, by the way. Good, one of those good old songs. Yeah, it's about Christ, and that makes sense because the notion of redemption and God's redemption of His people comes to fruition through Christ. Now, in the Old Testament, often our Redeemer is associated with God, and therefore when Christ comes on the scene, and when you come to the New Testament and you look at Romans and it talks about redemption. By the way, what does the word redeem itself mean in the New Testament especially? To buy back. So when we hear that language, we even think of those who are in slavery to sin, and Jesus, through His sacrifice, redeemed us by His precious blood. Okay, and we've been, basically, He paid the price for us to be removed from that kind of slavery. Okay. And that's completely scriptural and powerful and true in the overall view of the Bible. I want to be very clear. That's the bigger picture here. So even if I were to think of God as Redeemer, if I look at the story of salvation, that's going to lead me to look at Jesus and see the love of God in Christ. And so I want you to understand, that's completely biblical. I believe this is an inspired literature, of course, but I would say to you, you still have to take into consideration what Job would have understood when he wrote this. Okay? There may be some allusions to the future even in his statements. So I'm not against that. I'm just saying let's work through it. With Job, with what seems to me to be his limited comprehension or understanding at this time, because you realize this may be the oldest, if not one of the oldest, books of the Bible. And the account is way back there. So would Job have thought, okay, I'm talking about Jesus Christ coming in the flesh and providing salvation? No. Job wouldn't have been thinking about that. Now, this may be a situation where you have which was what I would argue, there's more to some of his statements than he even realized. Okay, that's possible. But I just want you to understand that we need to look at this context because there is a powerful lesson here, somewhere in here. So he does mention, I know that my Redeemer lives. Does anybody have, and I don't necessarily, but does anybody have any question in your mind that he would be talking about God? Is everybody on the same page? I know that my Redeemer lives. I think he is talking about God. There are people that have a hard time with that because it doesn't seem like the way he's been talking about God. Okay, so some would argue that he's speaking in a more, it's kind of a personification. I'm not arguing this, I just want you to know about it, okay? Personification of his integrity. Kind of like that witness earlier, and I think Roger mentioned last week, where his witness is really his integrity. The one witness he has in heaven is his integrity and his innocence. And some argue, how do you go from him saying, hey, I know that my Redeemer lives, how do you get there from what we just read in chapter 19? I think it's a fair question. It's worthy of us talking about it, okay? Don't just go, wow, that's not what I've always thought and forget about it. Because what has he just said about God in chapter 19? He's the enemy. I'm his enemy. I mean, all that you've heard is he's targeted me, he's reined me in. We've read all that, okay. That doesn't mean he's not talking about God being his Redeemer. I just think you need to deal with the context because I do think there's a powerful lesson in here for us about faith. Okay. So, Roger, did you have your hand up a minute ago?
Just a thought about it. I think the Redeemer here is the personification of his redemption.
Okay.
Who can give that?
Only God. So, you would argue, and I would be able to deal with that, I think, that What he's really crying for when he says, I know that my Redeemer lives, is the righteousness of his integrity. But the only one that can really give him this, even though he hasn't felt that he's getting any, is God.
And I think he's saying that either before he dies or after he dies.
Yeah.
You will see it. You men will see that I'm being vindicated. I was not, an enemy of God. I don't understand all this.
Yeah, even though I feel hopeless and I can't see how this is going to work out right now, one way or the other. So what's interesting to me about this is as frustrated as he is, and he feels like he's an enemy of God and he feels targeted and all that, there does still seem to be in Job some notion. There are certain unalterable truths about God. And even though I can't figure this out, there's still some sense about, there has to be a sense of absolute truth and holiness about God, so that at the end of the day, at some point, there will be some vindication of me and it will be clear, whether it's this side or the next. Okay. I think that's what he's saying. And when he says, I know that my Redeemer lives, his certainty is that there will be vindication of me. Again, if he had any hesitation about his faithfulness to God, he wouldn't be saying that probably. Okay. Alan, did you have some? Anybody else? I'm going to go further, so I'm not leaving it there. My point to you is, I know that my Redeemer lives, and to me it fits. And to try to say, okay, here somebody is in grief, I'll get you in just a minute, grief and agony and all that, and that everything is this deeply analytical, well thought out, matching up, harmonious. Look, when you're going through grief, when you're going through serious loss and agony, you will, and if you've ever dealt with somebody who's gone through serious loss, it's not unusual to find them crying out to God, not understanding, feeling targeted, feeling like they're in this hostile relationship, but yet their faith still kicks in. And they still have this understanding of who God is. And they still believe there'll be redemption. Do you see what I'm saying? So just because somebody feels confused or disoriented doesn't mean they've given up on who God is or future redemption or future hope or whatever. So this is why I'm saying this. We need to be careful when somebody is in a very, very hard, difficult place about being too quick to judge their motives and the genuineness of their faith when we have no idea the struggle that they may have. And it may run very, very, very deep. And the deeper the loss, the deeper the struggle. In assuming, because maybe they didn't say something just like we thought they should have said it, or what seems to be the pinnacle of great faith. Before we jump to all those conclusions, realize that when you're disoriented, sometimes what you say or what you're thinking feels that way. And it doesn't mean they're unfaithful to God. It doesn't mean that they are not loyal to God. It means that they're disoriented. It means that they're struggling. Job has said some pretty serious things with his limited understanding. Now, as we approach grief, we strive to be reverent and respectful before God. But I would say that what I see in this text is that Job, what he is clinging to is his confidence and his integrity, and that even though he's confused and even though he feels like God's enemy, he still has... Why would he be crying out to God if he didn't have some confidence that at some point there's going to be this vindication? And so even in his feeling of hopelessness, the one thing he does hope for is that God will recognize his integrity. Does that make sense? So I do think, and that goes to the point, I do think this notion of I'm confused, I feel like an enemy of God, I feel in this hostile relationship, I feel like I'm at the blackest bottom of this trial, I don't understand why this is happening, but if I have a redeemer, it's going to be God. Because it's not going to be my friends, it's not going to be my wife, it's not going to be anybody else. It has to be Yahweh. It has to be God. That's my understanding of it. Alan, you had your hand.
The path, like you talked about, it's not linear. It's not
right.
It's a roller coaster.
Mm-hmm.
And have some glimmer of hope.
Right.
And that's, you see it. There's doubt out every day in grief.
Right.
People are laughing one minute and crying the next.
Now, here's our next question. This is for next week. We may need a whole week for this one. There's a couple of possibilities on this I want to mention to you. He says, and you got to read all of it, so as for me, I know that my Redeemer lives, and at the last, he will take his stand on the earth. That is not to be interpreted literally. He is not saying, okay, the Lord's going to come. I don't think Job had any thought that he was actually going to come stand physically on the earth. That language is courtroom language. When he says, take his stand on the earth, and I actually did a little bit of, work on that notion, let me mention a couple of things. The word redeemer means vindicator, avenger, or defender. My only possible defense is the very one who I feel is targeting me. Okay, that's what he's saying there. Stand on the earth is the idea of having the last word. Now that makes sense with the language. So he's saying, beyond my friends, beyond or who thought they were his friends, I still believe there will be a defense of me and a vindication of me, and I will stand in right relationship with God. Psalm 17:15 has very similar language. And let me mention this to you. Psalms 19, I just want you to think about it. We're going to pick up here next week. He says, as for me, I know that my Redeemer lives, and at the last he will take his stand on the earth, which means get the last word on this. Even after my skin is destroyed, yet from my flesh, or some say in my flesh, I shall see God. So he mentions, even if my flesh is destroyed, yet in my flesh I shall see God, or yet from my flesh I shall see God. I will mention this to you. The Hebrew on this term is difficult. Okay. Most scholars think it is in my flesh from my flesh. Others actually say out of my flesh. Let me explain why. Some would say he's saying, even if my flesh is destroyed, whether I'm in my flesh or not, I'll be vindicated. So that would mean whether I'm here or in eternity, I will be vindicated. That's a possibility that he could be saying that. The other possibility is simply to say, no matter how bad my suffering gets, I shall still be vindicated. No matter how much the flesh rots off my bone, I still am going to be vindicated. Okay. Others, and I have in the past, and even though I firmly believe in the resurrection, I don't know that Job had the full comprehension of all this, and we'll talk about it next week. Say, well, is this an allusion to a future resurrection? I believe in a future resurrection. I'm just not for sure this language is really saying that. I think what he is saying is, whether it's this side of eternity or in eternity, I'm going to be vindicated one way or the other. And he believed God would be the one. So some, the New Revised Standard Version, we'll stop there and we'll talk more about this next week, says that what he may be saying is something like this, and I think this would be possible, that what he's praying for is something like this: yet to behold God while still in my flesh, that is my desire, to see Him with my own eyes. In other words, if you ask me what I want in my flesh, I want to be vindicated by God. But regardless, I will eventually be vindicated. Okay, so there's a statement of faith there that's very strong. So even though I feel like He's targeted me, I still believe I have redemption in my integrity before a holy God. Okay? We'll stop there.